Diversity.
Years have caused confusion. I'll crash its board.
Well, hello everyone. Welcome to Office Hours. Flying solo this week. Just been very busy, so I haven't really had time to ask anyone to come on. I've had a lot of stuff on. I've become a bit obsessed with the old channel revamp. I've got into bits of YouTube I've never been into before. The extremely robust analytics on the back end, and I've been exploring features that I didn't even know existed. I've been getting into all sorts of things. It's become a bit of an obsession with me now. One of the issues I've got is that with the new thumbnail game, with the new thumbnail style, I'm now upset that it's not all uniform across the history of the entire channel. And I keep on making tweaks. I'm very much a man of structure. When I set a structure, I like the structure to persist, okay, and to endure, and to have that structure lay the foundation for things. That's how I always was. You know, when I was playing Football Manager, I would have a system, you know, and I want everybody to play to the system. And now I've got this new structure and this new system. It's kind of bugging me that the whole channel isn't conforming to it. But I've been busy at work, basically, trying to create a canon of kind of videos that I'm happy to preserve. I put tons of videos behind the paywall, but if you can have a look now, I finally have the structure. The structure is not going to change now. Let me just show you here. So I did have the black and white, but now I've gone to this teal, black and white with a teal tinge, with that kind of texture effect on it. You can see that texture effect? And I've gone back and I've basically made every video conform to this, apart from the members only ones. So if you were to come at this and you weren't a channel member, you can't see these other ones, right? If you're just a kind of stranger having a look, it's all just the same. It's all uniform. And I kind of love that. Talking Turley's behind the paywall now. So there's lots more stuff for a channel member. You see, I've kind of gone through and created a canon of videos that have the official house style. And eventually, you see, even the Mario one got one. I've really gone back and gone through many, many, many videos, paywalled anything that doesn't fit, and there it is. So I've really been streamlining, all of which takes time, of course, but I kind of, you know, if you're going to do something, you might as well do it all the way, I say. You might as well do it all the way. I've got to have a system. Anyway, that's that. So I've kind of been getting a bit too busy on stuff that nobody's even going to notice, but half the time. Somebody said it looks like bathroom lighting. I'm very committed now to the black and white teal thumbnail with the texture effect on it, as a kind of house style. Once I've got my system, it's like this football team is going to play in the Christmas tree foundation formation, or we're going to play 4-5-1 with one strong man up front and an anchor man in midfield, and that's how we're going to play. And everybody in the entire club has to learn to play that way. That's, you know, down to the youth team. And so I want it ingrained. I want the new system ingrained in everybody's brains. 9 o'clock every morning, there's a video. It's going to be books on Monday, British news on Tuesday, American news on Wednesday, international stuff on Thursday, and something cultural and fun on Fridays. Every week, without fail, 9 a.m., with a shorter 8 a.m., this stream at 2 p.m., and 11 a.m., Adam Curtis review on Wednesdays. There it is. That's the system. And as time goes on, I'm getting more and more comments of people saying, like, I was skeptical at first, but now I'm starting to love the new format. I'm seeing more and more of those. And as time wears on, as the system gets more ingrained, as we get more used to it, you'll learn to love it. So anyway, what are we going to talk about this week? Well, I have the super thanks lined up, but there's a couple of news items that I wanted to draw people's attention to. I'm not going to make a video about the Israel-Hezbollah situation. My video on Thursday is actually a guest spot by Black Horse comparing Justin Trudeau and Keir Starmer and asking whether they're following a set agenda, whether their policies are basically identical. Very good work by Black Horse there. So I'm not going to look at that yet. But obviously, as we speak, the situation is developing. They've been hitting Lebanon all week. The troops have apparently just got ready to go across the border into Lebanon. Hezbollah are striking Tel Aviv. They're also, Israel are hitting sites in Damascus and Syria at the same time. Iran are claiming that they were lied to by American diplomats who gave them assurances that as long as there were no assassination attempts on the Israeli high command or on Netanyahu, they had assurances that the Israelis would not do the same to Hezbollah high command. Apparently that was a lie. There are scenes in Tehran of people asking what the hell is going on? Why are they just sitting on their hands? So anger is rising on all sides. At the same time, nothing ever happens, right? At the same time, nothing ever happens. So it's kind of interesting situation. Now, I originally called the thumbnail Office Hours, Nothing Ever Happens, but I thought I'd go with World on the Brink with a little picture of Tim Pool there, right? We're on the cusp of World War III again, guys. My instinct is to say that the Iranians are really, really just going to sit on their hands. Why do I say that? Well, the Ayatollah has said about five different times now, oh, if you do this, it's going to be hell to pay. Oh, you've crossed a red line. We're going to be really angry this time. And every single time, he just doesn't do anything. He doesn't react. And I've been trying to make sense of this because they're starting to look like real chumps now. And Israel is starting to look like they can basically just get away with everything, which I did at the moment. I reckon they've had their greatest victories in the past week or so. Not just the pager thing, but the strikes on, the killing of the head of Hezbollah. That head of Hezbollah was not, I mean, he's presented in the West as just being any old terrorist or whatever, but he's a very big symbol in the Middle East. He's a kind of a revered figure in the Muslim world. So he's a pretty big get. You know, I would argue bigger than hitting bin Laden back in the day. Bigger than hitting bin Laden, this guy. Nothing happened. Basically, there's been no real robust response. Kind of Israel's got away with everything. And they're just going for it at the moment. Netanyahu is just going for it. And my read of the situation as things stand is, what's stopping them, basically? If you're going to go for it, and if you can get away with it, and if nobody's going to say anything or do anything, why not? What have they got to lose? So it seems to me that the Israelis are going for it, and the Muslim powers, especially the Iranians, and the Arab powers as well, are just either bricking it because they're too weak to actually have this fight, or they don't want to give America an excuse to get involved. But the problem is that the tactic of just sitting on your hands, which is what the Ayatollah has done, and he's shown great restraint and he's shown great caution and all the rest of it, what's it actually gained him? Because it seems to me that you're basically giving the opponent tempo, what you call in a chess match, tempo, right? I think the Ayatollah is giving Netanyahu tempo. right? And as things stand, they're losing. I think the so-called resistance, the Muslim powers, the Iranians, all of that side, they're losing at the minute. And Israel is just winning big time. There's no other way of looking at it unless something drastic changes in the next week or so. So the question is like, well, all of this rhetoric, is it, why aren't they doing anything? Are they just shit scared of America? Maybe. Is it that they're actually too weak and it's all bluster? They don't have the capacity to fight? Maybe that's true. Is it that there's the cautious hand of China with the new leverage of China over Iran due to various different deals that they made? Possibly. Is it the Russians really calling the shots? Possibly. It's hard to say. But in my view, unless the Iranians make a move soon, they pretty much lost this. I just cannot see a situation where they haven't just lost and the Israelis have won. Now a lot of people have argued that actually, even though it looks ridiculous, sitting and waiting out the Israelis and letting the Israelis spaz out and almost kind of punch themselves out, you know, that, okay, they may kill hundreds of thousands of people in the process, and they may level cities and streets and so on, but a kind of allowing them to do that without reacting could lead them to fizzle out, i.e. they're trying to escalate, they're trying to create this regional war. If they do all of that and end up not doing so, they've just kind of like, it's the equivalent of kind of like a retard kid spazzing out in the middle of a square, attacking a pile of people, and everybody just kind of rubberlet necking, looking on, what the hell are you doing type thing, but also like not intervening. I don't know about that. It sounds copey to me. My read on the situation is that the people on the kind of side of the quote unquote resistance have sounded copey in the past week or so. And pretty much it's now or never. If the Israelis are treating this as make or break. And I think if the so-called resistance sit on their hands for much longer, they're just going to come out of this looking like chumps, basically, which is what they're looking like at the moment. Absolute chumps. President of Iran is claiming that the Americans lied to him. Well, it's like, well, no shit, Sherlock. I mean, how long have you guys been around? You don't know that the great Satan and the little Satan are going to lie? Of course they're going to fucking lie. You know who you're dealing with here. So I don't know. I've had enough of Cope when it comes to that. I mean, yes, there's always fog of war. There's always stuff that we don't know in any given situation. But, you know, the other thing I wanted to draw people's attention to, people were wondering, like, why are Russell Brand and Jordan Peterson in the headline of this? I have to show people this. This is one of the most blackpilling things. When I saw this morning, I just tweeted out, I might become a leftist. 2,000 people like that tweet. It's, if you haven't seen it, it's basically, I won't play the sound. It's basically Russell Brand and Jordan Peterson leading a crowd in the Lord's Prayer, looking like bloody Harvey Two-Face and the Joker. I mean, this is where we are now. This is what, you know, the quote-unquote movement has become. This is MAGA now, basically. It's this. It's this kind of clown show here. And I was kind of interested, like, what sort of stuff is Russell Brand? Is he still on the vaccine stuff? Like, what sort of stuff is Russell Brand talking about now? So I headed over to his YouTube channel. And Russell Brand, if you look at him, has just become a completely generic MAGA content creator, making those different faces. You won't believe what Kamala, you know, look at Kamala being trolled. Oh my God. Oh shit. It's over. You never guess what. Oh, look at this host draw. I can't believe it. Oh, wow. okay, it gets views, you know, it's Russell Brand, he's famous, but I'm really disappointed that Brand has basically just become this. And this is something I've, especially as we get closer to the election, I can see Gio in the comments to me on the Twitter there said that Brand has always been like this. I'm not sure about that. There was a whole period, especially during the pandemic and so on, where Brand was actually saying some interesting stuff. And it's funny, isn't it, that, you know, he has this hit on his livelihood. They try to bring him down with that whole thing about him being a sex pest or whatever. I don't know what happened to that. He was meant to be gone to the police. What, they found him innocent? There was not enough evidence. I don't know what happened with it. But all of that seemed to go away. And lo and behold, Russell Brand has become a generic magatard who's praying to Jesus next to Jordan Peterson. And I had a look. I was like, well, if there's one thing that Russell Brand was, he was always against the neocons. Has he been talking about what Israel's been up to? Funny enough, no. He doesn't talk about that anymore. Interesting. But yeah, I've noticed a kind of wider pattern of this happening where all of these people who at one time may have been interesting, may have had something different about them, basically kind of changed to become just the MAGA slop, right? Just the MAGA slop. This has actually happened to Elon Musk. I don't know if people have been paying attention. Elon Musk now is now the most generic kind of MAGA poster going. Yes, he's still Elon Musk, but all of the interesting things about Elon Musk seem to have kind of gone away. And all you're left with is this kind of noise, this kind of gray sludge where everything congeals into this kind of soy face world of everybody perpetually being shocked at things. Oh my God, guys, look at this. What did Ashley Sinclair say today? Oh, I cannot stand it. And unfortunately, that's most of my social media feed now. Even guys I'm mates with and have kind of, you know, paid attention to or respected, they're all just doing this MAGA slop bullshit now. It's like, oh, it's the latest thing. So anyway, I'm kind of glad not to be part of all of that. And, you know, earlier on, I muted Black History Month. Look, I don't really care what Dawn Butler had to say. She's Dawn Butler. She's an idiot. She's always been a lolco. I can't stand her. I really can't. But yeah, it's just, for me, it's just sad to see somebody, to see people who have things they can offer or different perspectives just kind of degenerate and wither into just another kind of libs of TikTok type account, you know? And that's all Russell Brand does now, you know, and these showy displays of Christianity. It's like, honestly, I found him much more interesting when he was a leftist, to be honest. At least he touched topics that could get him in trouble once in a while, you know? Anyway, yeah. So yeah, I'm sure Russell Brand was given an offer he couldn't refuse at one point. And, you know, now he's hanging out with old, you know, two-faced Jordan Peterson. What else was there before I get into the questions for today? Was there anything else? Yes, there's all sorts of rumors doing the rounds about Keir Starmer. There's some great scandal that is brewing, and everybody's been on everybody's lips. There's been this kind of mysterious twink character who came out of nowhere and got like 2 million hits on one tweet. Just another Tory twink, as far as I can see. Maybe he's part of Reform or something. It's funny how many gay guys there are in right-wing circles, isn't there? But anyway, there's something brewing with Starmer, and there are rumors, friends, that if this story comes out, they're really trying to suppress it at the moment. It's not necessarily the one I talked about the other day, although that is a story, the one with Lord Ali. And I'll say more about that in a second. There's another story I'm not going to mention it because I don't want to get into legal trouble or anything like that. But yeah, that has been the big thing that everybody's talking about, that it could actually bring Starmer down. That we could actually be seeing the last days of Starmer in the next week or so. Fingers crossed, touch wood. we could even see Chip Shop Debs as the Prime Minister for a while. Can you imagine Prime Minister Rayner? That'd be amazing. Yes. How do you send a super chat? You click on the super chat button, you send the money, and Bob's your uncle. All right, so let's have a look then at some of the super thanks that came in over the week, because I know how to do that now. There is one that came through on the Trump eating Haitian dogs thing. This is from Frenjamin Church. He says, in 2020, I tweeted something like, and I will mention that, I'll go as long as there are questions. If there are no more questions, I'll finish the stream early, go and have a cigar, even though it's raining, or I'll go and do something else. Use it or lose it, as I say. But Frenjamin Church says, in 2020, I tweeted something like this regarding exaggerated FBI crime stats, which you agreed with and read on stream. This video is 100% correct. Great work. So he's talking about my take on Trump's persuasion game using the Haitians eating dogs line, which up until a couple of days ago, they were still talking about in America, which is kind of crazy. Thomas Gaines put a super thanks on the Russia versus NATO unrestricted warfare video. You know, there's been 5 videos since last week. There was, I'm trying to remember what I put out now. What were the videos of the past week? I mean, I should probably do that on every office hours, right? I should tell you what videos there have been and which ones are coming up. So the 5 videos that have been since last Tuesday, we had the Keir Starmer landlord hater. That was last week, wasn't it? Haitians eating dogs, Trump's mistake. Russia versus NATO, the unrestricted warfare. The Beano and the Dandy top 10. Which has actually got one of the biggest Beano YouTubers has dropped in, and he kind of got very excited when he saw that. There is the bonus video, the plot to oust Keir Starmer. Now, that was originally called Queer Starmer, and I noticed it was being suppressed, right? It was being suppressed in the algorithm, right? It was being suppressed in the algorithm. I noticed that because I've been paying more attention to analytics recently, and videos have a natural arc, right? They get most of their views in the first day, then a few more, and you know, trails off a bit in the second day, third day, and then it kind of, you know, then it's kind of done its numbers, and you know, it may pick up a few more. That's the typical. You do get videos that have a long afterlife as well. That's a different type of video. But for a news video like that, that's the typical arc. Well, something weird happened on the Keir Starmer, the Queer Starmer video yesterday. It hit about 16,000 views and then it just stopped. Like, I remember it was in the morning. So yesterday was Monday. Yesterday morning it was on 16,000 and it just didn't pick up any views at all over the course of the day. I thought, that's a bit strange. That doesn't usually happen. You know, because it released on Saturday. You know, it picked up views on Sunday as well. Then it just stopped. Well, that's unusual. So I changed the name. Took Queer Starmer out of it. And then it started picking up views again. So I was like, oh, interesting. Maybe Downing Street got on the phone to all the social media companies and they were like, shut that down. Squash this. Apparently, there's various super injunctions against various newspapers. You know, there's a super injunction in place from Starmer to stop people talking about not only the Queer Starmer story, but also various other potential stories as well. So quite a lot going on there. And how exciting would it be, friends, if Starmer was done after only a couple of months, I'd be so happy, because he is such a bastard. We all hate him. I even saw one rumor that there's talk of Tony Blair coming in. I'd be the most excited man in the world if the Dark Lord came in as a caretaker or something. That'd be incredible, wouldn't it? Oh, I love democracy. One world government warning, and yesterday, and then of course this morning there was Farage about deportations. That's the weak Farage reference. So those are all the videos of the past week. Hopefully you watched most of them. And then in terms of what's upcoming, I've got tomorrow, I can't wait, Puff Daddy, What Did He Do? The best title I've ever had for a video. Puff Daddy, What Did He Do? Thursday is the Trudeau versus Starmer. On Friday, I got a video about the snooker in my culture slot. Me and George Adams are talking about the snooker as a British institution, talking about Ronnie O'Sullivan, Stephen Henry, and stuff like that. That is how the rest of the week looks. And then there's stuff next week. Next Wednesday, I know there's Kamala Harris. Is she there to lose as a jobber? Next Tuesday, I've got a video on backing Kemi Badenoch as the Tory leader, which is very important, friends, that you get behind Kemi, because if Jenrick is in, T1000 reforms, basically. And next Monday, there's an absolute beast of a video going to drop. Ultimate Red Pill Books version 2.0. One of the most frequent requests I get is to make another Ultimate Red Pill Books video, because my last one was 6 years ago. And obviously a lot has changed in 6 years. And I finally done it. There are 60 books on there, categorized by theme. That will drop next Monday. And I expect that will get some talk as well. Anyway, next question then. So Thomas Gans on the Russia versus NATO video. Thomas Gans says, do you have what it takes to do the trivium? You are the trivium. I am the trivium. I love studying the trivium. I do the trivium every day. Join the movement. Study the trivium. Buy the trivium at the academic agency. Because when you're thirsty for knowledge, there's only one way to learn. And that's with the world's best course on the liberal arts on earth. Buy it now, responsibly. The trivium, where learning meets greatness. He actually super thanked that. I didn't pay him to do that. I suppose it's only, it'd be remiss not to play the advert now. Yeah, so everything he said, do the trivium, friends, and when we come back, I'll take more questions.
Academic agency.
All right, so let's carry on with these super thanks. So Alphonse Rides Again says, so this is on the Beano and the Dandy video. He said, my granddad got me into these cartoons, and he said that the Dandy was the most popular comic when he was a kid in the 1930s. Maybe it's more straightforwardly heroic. Roger the Dodger was an ultimate Sigma male. Well, maybe that's why Roger the Dodger appealed to me so much, because he was a Sigma, and I am arguably, I would say, definitely a Sigma. I know everybody says that, but in my case, it absolutely is true. In terms of the Dandy being more popular, I mean, I suppose the Dandy of the 1930s and the Beano of the 1930s were very different beasts from the ones that we used to read as kids. A lot of people on that video said that they took the Beano, and their younger brother took the Dandy. Now, I'd never heard of this idea of the older brother taking the Beano and the younger one taking the Dandy. To me, they were just the same, really. the Beano was slightly better than the Dandy, better characters in general. But the Dandy had some good stuff in it. Jocks and Geordies, Buddy Beef and Chips, you know, stuff I talked about in that video. One of the things that I was not paying attention to all these years that I've been on YouTube is the actual category of where I put the video. So all of my videos up until the other day have been in the category of education, right? Well, obviously, the Beano and the Dandy one should have been in like film and animation. The news one should be in news and politics. I've never bothered with that, but because it's kind of hidden. There are a lot of hidden stuff on YouTube that you can fiddle with, and I've never bothered with any of it. So I've started doing that now. And interestingly, when I changed the category of the Beano and the Dandy one, it picked up 1,000 views, like almost in the next like few hours. So kind of interesting. And that is when that Beano guy dropped in as well. So clearly, it does matter what category you put a video in, which feeds it turns up to, I suppose. The next super thanks is One World Government, a warning. Will you be using your publishing contacts to get these books into wider circulation? He's talking about Richard Hilton's 13th Power. Or will you maintain your monopoly on them in true carpet merchant style? Well, I mean, if I was really smart, I would pimp books and then pump up the price and then try to sell my copies on eBay, wouldn't I? I could make a mint doing that, couldn't I? Or just maybe even do an auction on here. Who wants my copy of Richard Hilton's 13th Power? See if I can get it up into four figures or something. But no is the answer. If there are any publishers listening, Mike from Imperium Press or any of the other dissident presses out there, Richard Hilton is one definitely that could do with some new editions. Both Imperial Obituary and 13th Power are ridiculously hard to find, and they should be reprinted. But what the copyright situation is on them, I don't know. Maybe the copyright still exists, you know. I have no idea. That is it for the super thanks. But there are now the super chats with various questions coming in as well. Justin General says, you said last year that Israel is done for. Do you still think this, and how do you rate Iran's prospects now? Well, Justin, I did see a stat that was doing the rounds on Twitter that said that of the general public in Britain, okay, let me just pull this up because it is relevant. So this is from this guy, Lefty Stats. Actually has me blocked on Twitter, annoyingly, so I have to open up an incognito tab. He blocked me after I made fun of his spectacles or something, which is fair enough, I suppose. I would have done the same to him. Yeah, so Israel's favorability in the UK has fallen to its lowest on record. 7 in 10 hold an unfavorable view. Its favorability rating is 17%, and its unfavorable rating is 66%. And I will just pull up this stat so people can see it on the screen. That is pretty shocking from where they've been to what it is now. I'll pull it up on screen, this stat, and I'll answer the question in a second, but have a look at that. I mean, you know, that's pretty bad, isn't it? And who'd have thought that since October the 7th their rating has only gone down and their unfavorability rating has only gone up? And this is from YouGov. It's very interesting indeed. Considering how much of the political class is in hock to them and how much media is spent and how much efforts are made on social media to get you to love Israel and so on, that is really quite interesting. Trouble is, it doesn't matter, does it? It doesn't matter what people say. Doesn't matter what people do. It doesn't matter what the British government says, Western governments say, or even what the American government says. They just don't give a shit, the Israelis. They're just going to do what they're going to do. Netanyahu is a law unto himself. Nobody's going to rein him in. The only people who could rein them in are the Americans. They're not going to do that. They've shown basically that there's basically no red line. There's nothing that Israel will do that America won't back. Honestly, I reckon the Israel could drop a nuke and the Americans would still back them at this point. And as long as that remains the case, and as long as the Iranians sit on their hands, they've won, as far as I can tell. Now, my assumption when this started was that the weight of world opinion and the delegitimization of Israel would come to a point where there's basically a moral imperative, right, that they've lost legitimacy and therefore things would happen following that. But Israel, and Netanyahu in particular, this is the chutzpah, yeah, the chutzpah that they talk about, they've just been like, yeah, fuck all that. It doesn't matter, basically. We're just going to do it anyway. We're going to have a war on three fronts. We're going to fight Syria, Lebanon, the Houthis. We're going to, smash the Palestinians. We're going to do them all at the same time. We're going to have maximalist goals. We're going to start a war with Iran. We're going to drag a USA into it. We're going to take the condemnation of the whole world, and we don't fucking give a shit. It's kind of based in a way. It's also kind of asked the world a question. I mean, the question that the world asked was, are there any limits on Israel's Schmittian exception? Are there any limits on their Schmittian exception? Because they do have a Schmittian exception. And you could say that they bought that Schmittian exception is justified by what happened in the 20th century. Okay? That would be the most charitable thing to say. And the answer to that question is no. There are no limits to the Schmittian exception. They can do what they want and get away with it. And they've shown that now. There are no limits. Israel is a law unto itself, and it's got a lot of guns and is prepared to use them all. So what? So in a way, we've got the answer to all those questions now. Basically, those stats, those popularity stats, Israel could have like 0% public support in the West. It doesn't really matter. Britain, America, Europe, doesn't matter. It could have 0% support as long as they've got the backing of the American government, which seems to be absolutely unconditional. They're just going to go for it. So, you know. So, yeah. So my assessment is that, and don't forget, in my thinking, ideology counts for much less than what people think. The weight of kind of faith or morality or soft power. Okay, don't forget, I'm the one in my various arguments with Aaron McIntyre. I'm the one who takes the Pareto position that it's all hot air. But even I have been surprised by how little it counts for. In the end, raw hard power won, and ideology and crying and moral legitimacy and my rules-based order and humanitarianism and my liberal democracy is all counted for. It was all bullshit, let's face it. And what won the day? Might. Might made right. Might won in the most barbaric, brutal, and animalistic way possible. And that's it. That's reality. So, I mean, who knows? Maybe the Muslim powers will surprise us and make a big comeback, but the way things stand, I just think Israel will get whatever they... I mean, the way it's gone so far, they've got whatever they want. They've done whatever they wanted. They've got away with it, and there's been no reply. That's my assessment of the situation. Complete victory for Israel, as things stand. So I tell it like it is. I mean, it doesn't matter. Everybody knows I'm not a big fan of Israel. But as my value-free analysis says, fair play to them. They came, they saw, And it looks like they're gonna conquer. That's the way things go sometimes. TK says, have you seen that Biden's admin just revised the last 2 years of economic data? Turns out the economy is doing great. Savings rate is high. The GDP number goes up, up, up. It's great timing for Kamala too. Well, it's funny that, isn't it? When you're the government, you can make up whatever numbers you want. I mean, I had a little short earlier on saying official statistics that often aren't true. You can't trust them. They often lie. Well, you can see the reasons, because the incentives to cheat on them are big, right? And the real test, though, is in an election year with a crucial election coming up, will lying about GDP numbers be enough? Or do people actually know how far their money goes? I mean, you do notice, right? I filled up my car the other day and I noticed that the price of a litre of petrol was £1.27, right? And I was like, oh, that's the lowest it's been for a long time. That's the lowest, that's the cheapest petrol's been in this country for about 4 years. You do notice. I've found myself various times buying something and being like, I mean, I had to buy a light bulb, you know, lights go out. So I went and bought a light bulb and it was something like £4.99 or £5.99. And, you know, in situations like that, I mean, I literally said, I was at the till. There was a South Asian fellow behind the till, but there was a woman behind me, a British woman behind me. And I just said out loud, I said, that's daylight robbery, that is. Making a little joke, you know, daylight, light bulb. And the woman behind me said, yeah, we'll be going back to candles next. Right. So you do, when things get expensive like that, you notice. I mean, that light bulb is what, three times the price it used to be. Now, maybe that's not because of inflation. Maybe that's because of these stupid LEDs or whatever. But the point is, you notice. I notice when the petrol is expensive. I mean, I remember when petrol was up at £1.78, right? And I'd fill up my car and it cost like 70 quid. And I tell you, every single time I picked up that tab, I said to the, you know, the guy behind the till was like, yeah, that's 75 quid. I'd be like, you what? 75 quid? Must be having a laugh. So, you know, you do, when you find yourself making those comments involuntarily when you're picking stuff up, you know, I mean, you've probably done it with the chocolate bars, you know, the shrinkflation. Oh, I'll have a Twix, please. Oh, that'll be £1.20. What? And one, that's it. It's half the size it used to be, and it's twice the price. So you do notice in your real life, is what I'm saying. So they can play around with the figures all they want. You notice those things, right? And if you've been in the process of buying a house or selling a house, you notice those prices even more, trust me. So anyway, Sir Keir Stormtrooper says, could the Alien movie franchise be viewed from a reactionary perspective as a warning against immigration and technocracy? I'm sure it could be. I'd need to watch those movies again. My tendency is always to think that the first Alien was really good. Then there's James Cameron with Aliens. It's more of an action movie, the second one. And I really didn't like the third one. So I'd have to really... I haven't seen those films in a while. I always remember the first Alien, the horror one, being the best of those films. Third Man says, do you like the music of MF Doom and early 20s rap? I've never been a big Doom guy. I got to know him better. If you go back in my archives, I did a stream on, or a video on Czarface once, you know, Inspect the Deck and that white dude he hangs out with. And they had a few MF Doom collaborations. And he's pretty good on those collaborations. And through them, I then went back and reassessed Doom. I kind of don't like his mumbling style. And I always felt that Doom was kind of nerd rap in a way. I've come to appreciate him more as time has gone on. really my period was the late 90s, as I'll talk about in my video that's coming out tomorrow, Puff Daddy, What Did He Do? I was really my era was the mid to late 90s. And then basically as rap went on, I checked out new albums by the 90s guys, and I didn't really get to know the new acts that well. The last new act I really dug was Run the Jewels, even though they're hideous left wingers. Run the Jewels, what's his name, LP, and Killer Mike. Those guys were good, really good albums, those were. But mainly I just kind of followed the Wu-Tang guys and various other kind of 90s guys, you know, as they went on. A lot of them started getting very, I didn't really like that Neptunes thing that happened, that production style of the Neptunes in the early 90s. And I remember all of them released one or two albums when they were all doing Neptune stuff. Nas had one and Jay-Z had one, and I was never really into that sort of stuff as much, because it seemed whack, as they say. Bill Wilson said, 90s Sonic the Comic had the best version of Sonic. Well, I was a Nintendo kid rather than a Sega kid, so I never got the Sonic comic, I'm afraid. Rob Earl says, Russia and Iran have signed a joint military agreement. It seems to me that Israel, brackets Glomo Hobo, wants to drag Iran in this to prevent Russia from building up their military. Am I coping, though? Well, I don't know. I mean, the situation is so complex and so unpredictable that I just don't know, because the Russians have been oddly forthright in their statements against Israel, more so. I mean, I always thought that Russia was kind of neutral with Israel, but they have been pretty solidly coming out on Iran's side and on the Palestinian side, in a way that I wouldn't have expected them to. I think that's because America has really, really pissed off Putin, and the West has pissed off Putin to such an extent that he's like, right, I'm going all in with your enemies now. It's team Russia, Iran, China, right? So Russia really is the wild card in this that could be preventing the fit. Because my read of the situation is that the Americans seem scared of something. And I'm thinking, like, what are the Americans so scared of? Why have they been so, like, cagey about all of this? And why do the Americans, whenever possible, de-escalate rather than escalate? Because what it seems like, and again, I don't have all of the information, maybe this is just American smokescreen, right? But what it seems like is that the Americans keep on being like, no, we're not up for this. I'm trying to put the kibosh on what Israel want to do. But the Israelis are so bolshy, I guess is the word you'd use. They're so bolshy, they're so gung-ho, that they just be like, fuck it, we're going to do it anyway. Sod you, we don't need your permission. So then they do it and inform Washington after the fact, right? It kind of reminds me of Tony, what I talked about with Tony Blair. Blair would always act first and then inform the country. And it seems like Israel act and then inform Washington, who then scramble for a reaction, knowing that through the power of AIPAC and through the hold that they have over the politicians there, that at the end of the day, Americans aren't going to do anything. At the end of the day, if, let's pretend Israel, I don't know, whoops, we've bombed another village, or whoops, we've killed another 20,000 people, oh, whoops, that missile just happened to land in Beirut or whatever, that they know that when push comes to shove, the Americans are going to have their back. That when Israel says jump, America will say how high. They count on that. And at this point, I think there's no doubt that there's no spine in Washington to say no to Israel. So that's really how it seems. What is dangerous in this situation is that if the Russians are serious about their commitments here, and Putin keeps on every once in a while being like, reminder everybody, I've got nukes, by the way, I've got nukes. And if the Russians are serious, and if the Israelis carry on in this very Bolshy manner, we do actually have all the pieces in place for World War III to happen. Everybody's talking about a regional war. But if we're talking like literally Russia, China, Iran on one side, that's a world war situation, right? If they're all serious about started through defense pacts, and it's kind of like a domino effect. What's weird about this is that the Americans are trying to do diplomacy, but the Israelis are breaking all the rules. And I don't know, like, it's hard to know what to make of it all, because it's like the Iranians are trying to be adults, the Russians are trying to be adults, the Americans are trying to be adults, surprise, surprise. But you've got this kind of wild slashing toddler, the Israelis, wildly just lashing out and doing whatever the fuck they want. And then the parent of that toddler, America, never disciplines the child, never says no, never says. And so it's like, well, how does everybody else react to that? Because if you've ever been in a situation where somebody's not disciplining their child, but the lack of that discipline could lead to other problems, does there come a time where you have to intervene? And I think that's the situation that the other powers are being put in at the moment when it comes to Israel. Honestly, though, my sense is that the Iranian government are just bricking it, and that everything that we're seeing is bluster, and that they don't believe that they can win this war, basically. Which is weird, because the Americans have been acting like they can't win it either. It's a very odd situation, because it's like a war that nobody really wants apart from the toddler in the middle. TP says, I mean, really what should happen is that Biden or Blinken or one of these fucking clowns, Sullivan, just needs to say like, okay, you've had your fun, you've killed 100,000 people, you've fucking decked, you know, you've decked your enemies, you've had your fun, Israel, go home, come on, that's the end of it. But they're not going to do that, as we know. TP says, do you think the primary purpose of the UN for the regime has been to support the mythology of international law? That was the idea, but in practice, as Major General Richard Hilton talked about, as long as you've got a power like America or Russia there, basically it's useless, because there's nothing to trump the larger power. So it basically ends up with a situation where, like the one we have now, where basically the UN only functions if America is on board with something, as in the cases of Slobodan Milosevic and Saddam Hussein. But for all other intents and purposes, the UN is not functional, is it? It cannot bring sanctions on people. I mean, there's an international arrest warrant for Benjamin Netanyahu. So there was talk of, well, if he goes to the UN, doesn't the UN have license to arrest him? Well, that didn't fucking happen. It didn't happen. So essentially, you've got a body that has no actual power to enforce its laws, which means it's purely symbolic. It's just a nonsense, really. Apart from if there's an international pandemic, in which case everybody's like, oh, yeah, what this UN organization says is absolute gospel and must dictate all the things that our government says, as if by magic. But in any other situation, it doesn't seem to work like that. So it's funny that, isn't it? TP says, I think Iran is waiting until after the election. Well, why would it do that? Because if Trump is the president, Trump is going to give Israel even more license to do whatever the fuck they want. I don't see any scenario where Trump acts as a limiting factor on what Israel want to do. Trump is an Israel maximalist. If Kamala Harris wins, then we're basically in the same situation as we are now. So honestly, I don't think Iran can afford to do much more waiting. I honestly think that the Ayatollahs are, they'd been playing this quite well, but Netanyahu was also playing a very aggressive game, a very aggressive game. It's like, I mean, we're talking about snooker on Friday. It's almost like a Alex Higgins versus Ray Reardon scenario. You know, the really attacking player versus the cautious snooker type, the Iranians being the cautious ones, the Israelis being all out attack. But the trouble is, at some point, you have to take your shots. And Iran is, I mean, it's pulled, I reckon, one or two too many punches now. And this line that, oh, the Americans lied, is a cope. It's a cope. America lied. America always bloody lies. So I don't know. I mean, there are other scenarios. Like, for example, one of the things that has been quite striking is Mossad's ability to infiltrate their enemies. There must have been a Mossad infiltration in the highest level of Hezbollah in order to know that the leader was in that room at that time. They have, I mean, let's face it, they've killed top Iranian officials. They have caused explosives to happen in Tehran. So the Mossad has been particularly impressive in the past few months with its ability to carry out these things. The pager attacks as well. Now, okay, you can moral fag and say, oh, it's terrorism, blah, blah, blah. It's clear that we're in a war scenario where all bets are off. There are no limits. There are no morals. This is unrestricted total war. Unrestricted war, total war. Okay? The Israelis are prepared to do anything. And I think that one of the possibilities that really could happen is that the Iranian regime could actually end up falling. Now, I don't think that will happen because they're particularly expert at staying in power. That's the one thing the regime are good at in Iran. But, I mean, imagine you're an Iranian now. They've spent billions on Hezbollah. They've spent billions on these kind of foreign war escapades, sometimes at the cost of normal Iranians not being paid for months on end, you know, actually affecting. You know, we talk about the Ukraine war and how that's affected us. Well, imagine that like times 10 or times 20 or something. And that's the situation in Iran. Lots of normal Iranians don't give a shit about Palestine. They're like, fucking Palestine, how about pay me? You know, I mean, it's not unusual for an Iranian to say like, well, hold on a second. Why should Iranians care about this? We're not even Arabs. And the Arabs aren't doing jack shit about it. Why is it up to us? Which is a fair point, I think. It's an obvious point, right? But, so this is very much seen as the Ayatollah's project. And if they are fucking up on their own war, right? If they've gone all of this and they're even losing on that front, well, that's a severe danger to the Ayatollah. So there's a scenario where Mossad infiltration in Tehran is better than we thought. And we could even see a regime change in Iran. Now, this is a long shot, I think, but it's a possibility, and I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't rule it out. I wouldn't have said that 6 months ago, but I think Israel have been kind of impressive on what they've been able to do on the Mossad front. You've got to hand it to them. They've played a few blinders. So, and on the flip side, I think Iran have been particularly unimpressive. Before I make a video about this, I want more information to come in. Things are too much in the air and there's still too many things I don't know. But if I had to make an assessment of the resistance of the pro-Palestine side, the only people who can hold their hands up and say they've had a good war so far are the Houthis. The Houthis have been phenomenal. They have done real damage. They have consistently been the aces in the pack. Hezbollah have been shit so far. Absolutely shockingly shit. They had a good victory back in 2006, but what the fuck they're playing out now, I don't know. Hamas have done nothing but hide out in their tunnels and watch their own people get blown to smithereens. And, you know, the entire Arab world is sat on its hands, and the Ayatollah is sat on its hands. You know, so, I mean, my assessment of the resistance is like at best a D minus, and most of those are coming from the effort of the Houthis, who get an A star. When it comes to Israel, in terms of their war effectiveness, they've kind of got most of the things they wanted so far. They've yet to take out Hamas, which after a year of blowing up children is not a great return. So they have to be downgraded for that a bit. But they've put, that pager thing, there are ethical qualms, yada, yada, yada. But that was a good move. Taking out the entire leadership of senior leadership of Hezbollah. I mean, a masterstroke. Taking out those officials in Tehran, possibly even killing the president of Iran. I mean, these are major moves that Israel have done. And they've pulled them off. So at worst, I would give Israel a B+, maybe even an A- for their war effort so far. They've been, better than what people have imagined. The IDF have avoided proper fights, but I mean, why would you play? I mean, if the IDF don't fancy it, why wouldn't Israel lean on their strengths? If their strength is espionage, intelligence, Mossad's ship, spy shit, or hitting long range missiles or whatever, lean on your strengths. Why would you ever lean on your weakness in a war? I mean, it's war, right? So in my assessment, Israel is winning at the moment. I would love to see a counter argument to that. I have considered counter arguments. People have been giving them to me on Twitter. Honestly, they sound like copes. Honestly, it just sounds like cope to me. I'm a realist always. Bruleham says Lebanese friends west who fled during the civil war, Christians, are now horrified by Israel. A complete new stance towards the Lebanese Muslims. The thing is that people can be horrified all they want. What bloody difference does it make? The fact is they're winning on the battlefield, and that dictates what's happening. No amount of being like, oh no, I mean, who cares? I mean, I've been watching Judge Napolitano, what about international law? Blah, 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 blah. I mean, like, at the end of the day, it's a war. At the end of the day, it's a war. And if the quote-unquote resistance is serious, they better start fighting it. Otherwise, Israel will just win with very little resistance, which is what's been happening. And, I mean, okay, people can be horrified. People can kind of, be disgusted at what's happened, but so what? They get the land. This is what conquest is, So Frank Drake says, I mean, the only good thing that could come of it, I suppose, well, I say good thing, quote unquote, is that once that has happened, nobody who supported it can then kind of do their moral fagging about various other things, can they? I mean, this is a fair point that the Russians have made. I mean, like, talk about what we did in Ukraine. Look at what Israel is doing. That's an argument that anybody now in the world can make. And the West doesn't really have anything they can go to because they turned a blind eye, basically, during this. It will fall on deaf ears. Frank Drake says, in Europe, immigration is most often opposed by appealing to indigeneity, ancient ties to the land, etc. And this always seemed weak to me. What are ex-colonies like Australia and New Zealand to make of immigration? I don't know the answer to that question, I'm afraid. That is a difficulty that Australians, New Zealanders, and Americans, of course, face, because they don't have that argument that they've always been there. Really, it's difficult to do unless you basically say, well, like, look, these are my people. I'm loyal to my people, and we own this place. We took it over in conquest. End of. You know, if you've got a problem with that, well, you know, sorry, your team lost. You know, fair's fair. If you want to take this from me, you better have, you have to do it, you know, the old-fashioned way in war. You prepared to do that? No, well, bugger off. And Israel are actually showing how difficult that is to do in the modern world. Israel are showing how difficult it is. Now things are settled, so you can point to that situation. Ratface says, a new top 10 red-pilled podcast video, please. Maybe. I mean, let's see how this book one goes next week, and then maybe I'll think about it. Truth is, I don't really listen to 10 podcasts anymore. I can tell you what I listen to. If Morgoth drops a video, I will always watch a Morgoth video. I discovered that Morgoth has got a weekly roundup that he does on his Substack, which I'm a paid subscriber to. So I listened to that. I didn't know it existed until he told me earlier on. So I always listen to what Morgs has to say. I watch a lot of Duran for my geopolitical updates. I watch Alistair Crook on Judge Knapp. Sometimes it depends on the topic, but I'll often stay on with Judge Knapp after Crook and watch McGovern and Larry Johnson as well. Really, Crook is the, for Middle East stuff, Crook is really good. What else do I listen to? Mike from Imperium Press, whenever he does an audio thing on Substack, I always listen to him. Kind of it, you know. Richard Spencer, I still listen to. Not with a frequency that I mean, the trouble is with my new schedule, I have to work a lot. And I do a lot of my listening and watching in the car. But due to my new schedule, I'm driving back and forth the lodge a lot less, maybe once or twice a week. So that cuts down on, you know, my podcast listening times are in the car or if I ever do any cooking. Right. And those are the times when I tend to kind of consume content. It's usually in the car. So even if it's a video, I'll just be listening to it. Spencer, I usually get his takes on things. Joseph Jordan and they do, I mean, they do like eight hour show on Odyssey. I haven't got time to listen to an 8 hour podcast, but I'll stick those guys on for a while. They usually have something interesting to say, a bit spicy for some maybe. But I'm prepared. I mean, the reason I listen to Joseph is because he often picks up on what detail that other people miss. Very often. He's very perceptive like that. I don't agree with all of his politics, obviously, but I don't know if I'd stick it in top 10, but I'm just truthfully black-pilled. I stick on. Again, I don't have 3-4 hours, but for the Puff Daddy thing, for example, if I didn't have the black pill video on it, I would have been lost as to what the fuck. Like, he's good at research, black pilled, and he's good at, you know, I don't like religiously do every episode, but I stick him on sometimes. I'm trying to think of other people I listen to. Lads and Lotus Eaters I stick on sometimes. Depends on the topic, but I kind of put Lotus Eaters on to see what the kind of general takes are around. There are some Lotus Eaters I prefer to others. I'll just put it that way. Harry's one of our guys. Love based Harry. Other people on there I'm less keen on. You can kind of figure out who. Obviously, Carl is a mate of mine. Dan is a mate of mine on Lotus Eaters. So I'm just trying to think of, like, there's a guy called Richard the Fourth that on YouTube that I check out sometimes. He is basically who I'm benchmarking my revamp against, because he does like decent numbers and he's got good thumbnail game. So I'm kind of doing, I mean, I'm joking around a little bit, but I'm kind of in a unofficial kind of channel war with Richard IV, because I'm not really, he does good stuff. He makes good stuff, but I need to have something to motivate me, and beating Richard IV is my motivator, basically. I have a competition in me. I hate most people. Who else do I listen to? Really, like, with those ones I just mentioned, by the time I've done my work and, you know, put the kid to bed or done the school run or whatever it is I'm doing, gone shopping, eaten, blah, 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 done my own stuff, work, chatted to the wife, blah, blah, blah. You know, in the course of a week, that's probably enough, really. Just trying to think. Like, I actually consume quite a lot of non-political content as well, which is usually dictated by whatever I'm working on for the Friday video now. So, like, there was one week where I was just listening to Carry On podcasts. I watched a ton of Beano videos last week, this week. And it's funny because Twitter loves YouTube algo loves it if you watch a non-political thing. So, I mean, I've had this guy playing the Blanka theme for Street Fighter 2 on my suggested list for weeks, and he just won't get off. And that is because I once looked up a Street Fighter 2 video, and it's like YouTube is like, oh, this guy loves Street Fighter 2. Let's fucking bombard him with Street Fighter 2, right? Well, this week, me and George have done snooker, and it turns out YouTube snooker is a thing. So I watched a few snooker videos. My feed is just like, yeah, you're going to fucking, like, Steve Davis, Stephen Henry, like, you love snooker. You're going to have all the snooker. One of the mistakes I made recently, I say mistake, because I was doing my thumbnails and revamping the channel, I was trying to figure out how the meta has changed on YouTube, how the algo has changed. Well, of course, I pulled up one of these, if you're looking to make so many subs, you know, do these 5 tricks on YouTube. Oh my God. There are so many of these channels giving like YouTube tips, and they're all like, are you stuck on 500 subs? Do you want to make it to 1,000? Well, do these best practices and all this sort of stuff. Well, you click on one of those and you get hammered. I mean, basically like half of my suggested videos are YouTube tips now. And I'm like, how does this work? Because I have been a political channel and mainly watch politics on YouTube for years. I watch one YouTube tip video and the algo's like, right, you're fucking having all of them. It's kind of crazy the way it makes like that. So anyway, yeah. And I still never clicked on Blanka Man if people have been following that. My laptop battery is on 13%. Shit. I need to go and get my charger, friends. You're gonna have to watch another video while I get my charger. Hold on. What's a good one? The rhetoric advert. I'll be back, friends.
Friends. Romans. Countrymen. Shh. Come this way. Lend me your ears. Secrets of ancient rhetoric can now be yours for a trifling sum. The art of persuasive argument is all around us. In fact, we are surrounded by it. We live in a rhetorical age, but this is seldom taught and even more seldom explained. It is not for you to know, they said. The master of grammar knows how to write with clarity, precision and correctness. The master of logic knows how to disarm his opponents with reason alone, and both can be powerful adversaries. But the master of rhetoric can outflank both, caring as he does little for their rules and even less for their defeated tears. The master of grammar asks, "Is this sentence correct? Is this sentence clear?" The master of rhetoric wonders, "Does my speech have the power to sway the passions? Can my words move the crowd?" Yes, it can. Yes, it can. The master of logic trains his mind to eliminate fallacies and formulate correct and well-defined arguments. The master of rhetoric knows that the reasoning mind can be flooded with emotions, that the flood can short-circuit logic and overwhelm his opponent, who will crumple. They will wonder why their well-written, well-reasoned arguments were so defenseless against the rhetor's apparent ability to bend reality to his will. Do the faces in the crowd not see through this dark magic? The master of rhetoric laughed at their wonder. He looked at the bemused, despairing face of the master of logic and spoke. "Harness that wonder, my friend. It was your own beloved Socrates who said, 'The only true wisdom is in knowing that you know nothing.' And wonder is the beginning of wisdom." He turned to the master of grammar. "So lucid and correct your prose, but why does nobody listen to you? It was your own favorite, George Orwell, who wrote, 'Perhaps a lunatic was simply a majority of one.' Do not rail at the crowd for what is in their nature. Understand what they are, and they will listen to you." And with that, the master of rhetoric was gone. Find out what else he has to say by signing up to Foundations of Rhetoric. Fulfill your destiny and complete the trivium.
Woo! It's been a while since I played that one. It doesn't really get many outings, that, but it's usually reserved for moments where I have to go out of the room like that. It's my it's my emergency advert. But yeah, I went to town on that one. I mean, it's a bit long, but yes, I employed every rhetorical trick under the sun there. Appeals to authority. Did you notice? It name dropped Socrates and George Orwell and talked a load of old crap, really. But hopefully it will have sold Foundations of Rhetoric to you, because that is what rhetoric is in a way. All of them, social proof, liking, all of the persuasion tricks. Dan Qua 1111 says, Hezbollah's command were aware of their fate, yet seemingly did nothing big. Only two options. Their stoicism was exceedingly idiotic. The more likely, Iran refused to disengage the safety on the big guns. Yeah, now, my understanding is that in Hezbollah, they're really pissed off. In Lebanon, the Hezbollah guys are pissed off with Iran, as things stand, because the break on Hezbollah going ham on Israel has been Iran. And the more the Ayatollah has dragged his feet, or the more the Iranians in general have dragged their feet, the greater danger Hezbollah is in. Basically, as you can see, Israel are making moves, and now they're literally invading Lebanon as we speak. Now, I have seen it suggested that the Iranians have been a bit, they're kind of like have no use for Hezbollah anymore, is how it's been put to me. Now, I don't know about that, because they've spent billions upon, I mean, talking hundreds of billions of dollars on propping up Hezbollah over the years. You know, like we're talking like ridiculous stuff, like a fifth of the entire Iranian GDP or something gone to prop up Hezbollah in times past. I remember my dad saying there was an audit and like a third of the entire budget was unaccounted for. You know, we're talking like huge amounts of money here, just gone missing in Iran. Could just be corruption, who knows what. But they spend it on all these proxy armies all around the world. So the idea that they're kind of done with them and that they don't have any use for them anymore certainly is interesting. seems like a massive waste of money to me. Like, what do they get from it all? What do they get from it? So if you have a look, this time last year or 2 years ago, Iran was sitting very pretty. They hadn't been stronger in that region, arguably since the bloody Qajars or something, right? Or maybe even before the Qajars, that they were looking strong, the Iranians. Post Saddam, they'd done really well with all their proxy armies everywhere. Israel is taking a sledgehammer to all of that now, which is what it wants to do. So, like, to try to dress it up as something the Iranians want, I think is a cope, personally. I always tell it like I see it. I think it's a cope. TP says, I was a Public Enemy fan. Elvis was a hero of the most. Elvis was a hero of the most. He never did shit for me. Motherfucker was racist, simple and plain. And John Wayne. Do you remember? Yeah, they were a bit black. They were a bit black nationalist for me, Public Enemy. I always got the impression that Chuck D genuinely hates white people. I never got that impression with some of the other rappers, but I certainly did with those guys. Professor Griff was basically a black racist, wasn't he? Black nationalist. From a certain point of view, you could say based, but from another point of view, it's like, well, yeah, but these guys also hate us, so, you know. Why should we listen to them? Philosophy says, I tell you who I like is DJ Premier and Guru. What are they called? Gangstar. Gangstar were a good act from the mid-90s. Yeah, I mean, there's no demand for it, but I could give you my top 20 rap act one day. But Gangstar would be up there. As well as Wu-Tang, and who else did I like? Big Pun was pretty good, you know. Not a player, I just fuck a lot. I mean, I didn't believe him. He was about 30 stone. Who's fucking Big Pun? Anyway. Philosophy says, your advice has made my relationship a breeze. I no longer argue when she's being unbearable. I just listen and say, yes, dear. She'll usually admit later that she was being overly emotional. Blissful. Yes, absolutely. You know, the shit test will come and go. I mention this in my Ultimate Red Pill books next week. I mention where most of this stuff comes from. It's from a book called The Way of the Superior Man by David Dada, who's really kind of distilled Evola for the masses, I guess. Because if you read Eros, if you read Evola's book on Eros, all this stuff is in there in a more esoteric form. But if you actually want to have it more like a kind of self-help book style, David Dada's The Way of the Superior Man. I have found generally when I follow that, life is easier. When I don't follow it, life is harder. TP says, have you heard that Russia's exclusion from SWIFT means that a decent portion of their economy is now hidden from the West? That's interesting. To say the least. When you say hidden, does that just mean that they don't know how big the Russian economy is anymore? That they just have to take Russian statistics at their word, I guess. Rollover 101 says, does the US fund Israel so much because of its strategic location and the potential to develop an alternative to the Suez Canal? I don't think so, Rollover 101. I think Israel has very limited strategic advantage. I mean, I really do take the John Mearsheimer line on this, that Israel is a liability and not a strategic asset whatsoever. It actually causes more headaches, more problems for America than it solves. I think its commitment to Israel is purely down to the fact that its ruling class are in thrall to the Israelis. Again, following the John Mearsheimer line through lobbying and things like Epstein Island, blackmail, Mossad, stuff like the Diddy stuff. I mean, who knows how deep it goes, but there are mechanisms that keep the ruling class in thrall to Israel. And as long as that remains the case, basically, well, as you can see, how much of the US's stance has made any sense whatsoever from the point of view of American interests? Almost none, right? Almost none. Yet they still back Israel to the hilt. No logical kind of realpolitik explanation is available here, because there's something else at play, whether it's corruption or just delusion, fanaticism, religious fanaticism is another possibility. But logic can't get you there, because there is no logic to America's actions when it comes to this. Thug Life Bear says, I may be at the end of my rope. My boomer relatives are constantly taking advantage, shifting the blame, patting themselves on the back, forgiving themselves, not resentful, but I don't know if I can take narcissism any longer. I am at the end of my rope. All I'll say, Thug Life Bear, is that everybody's the same. It's not just boomers. Every set of people, in a way, would rather take the easy line of self-delusion than facing facts. They'll come up with bullshit to justify themselves. And this is, another one of the books I'll talk about, I've mentioned it many times, is Jonathan Haidt's Righteous Mind. People are just kind of have built-in bullshitting lawyers, little defense lawyer, right? Which basically post hoc justifies yourself. And most people are like that, whether boomers or not. It takes a very rare person to have the honesty to not be like that. And it takes discipline and a certain degree of kind of self-training to not be like that. So I wouldn't hold it against your relatives. Just try to love them and forgive them. Forgive them, for they know what not what they do. And you'll never wake them up either. It's just like the David Ada thing with women, right? They're not going to come to some moment of realization. They're not going to own up to anything. They're not going to self-improve or any of the rest of it. They're women at the end of the day. And when it comes to boomers, you have to kind of have a similar mindset. Keller says, grading past wars with unlimited warfare list of points would be an interesting video, rating what point did the most in the war effort. Well, the thing is that the unrestricted warfare by those Chinese guys is specifically for modern post-Cold War. They wrote it like literally in 1999 for the current moment, or for the like war as it exists now. So I don't know if, and I don't know enough about military history or tactics or anything to know if you can backwards date it. A common refrain in that book is they're talking about Clausewitz, right? Well, they act as if prior to World War II, we were in Clausewitz world, right? But now we're not in Clausewitz world anymore. We're in this unrestricted warfare world, which is a different thing. I don't have enough knowledge of those affairs to make an assessment to know what they're talking about, to be honest. I tell you who's good on that sort of stuff is Vox Day. He's read a lot around military tactics. Semiagog also has got some knowledge in those areas. Coney says, what do you think will happen when Russia wins the war in Ukraine? Vuhledar has just been captured. Pokrovsvik will probably fall before Christmas. Toretsvik and Chasiv Yar will fall before then. Let's say Russia finished the war next year. What then? Well, Coney, as I'll explain in my Kamala Harris jobber video next week, if I'm correct about this, I could easily be wrong. Difficult to tell the future is. The dark side clouds everything, right? The dark side clouds everything. We cannot see the future. But if I'm correct, in my assessment, the US is going to pivot away from Ukraine, and it's going to use the Trump presidency to do so. And the built-in reason and the built-in justification to the rest of the world, to the rest of NATO, to Europe, will be, sorry, as Trump. Sorry, like, we'd love to help you, but, like, orange dickheads in the White House now. So can't help you anymore because the orange man bad, remember? So, you know, the European press and shit libs and have a ready-made narrative. Oh, it's the dickhead Trump. Trump has lost the war. Trump has given it to Putin, right? So they can sell it to the rest of the world on Trump. And let's face it, for America, for the domestic argument, a pivot away from Ukraine is a really easy to sell to the Republicans because they've never been interested anyway. And I mean, let's face it, the left in America are so stupid. You just pump them another thing for a week or so, and they'll forget Ukraine ever even existed. That's how fucking retarded they are now. So there's an easy off ramp with Trump in November for Ukraine, and I think that if Trump becomes the president, they'll pivot away from Ukraine and they'll focus their attention, at least in the short term, on the situation in the Middle East and Israel. And my expectation is that all of this stuff of trying to restrain Israel, the pretense of Biden's admin, you know, be like, oh, we don't really want you to do this, blah, the two-state solution, blah, blah, blah. I think all that will go out the window, and Trump he'll be like, listen, Israel, wrap this up now, wrap it up soon, you know, wrap it up. But that's basically a green light to go maximalist, go full ham, do what you need to do. We'll turn a blind eye until it's over type thing. So I do think that the Israelis, the hardcore Zionists, Netanyahu, likes of Carolyn Glick and so on, they want Trump. My bet that Trump is going to be the president is based on the fact that the Zionists want him. Okay, spoilers, everyone. Hopefully you will watch my Kamala Harris Jobber video now. But, you know, my assessment basically comes down to the fact that in the current play, in the current green, you know, there was a question there for a moment. You know, do you remember I wrote that article, will the woke put the Zionism away? Actually, no, Zionists just won on every front, got their own way on every single front with very little resistance in America and internationally. And because the Zionists are getting whatever they want, if the Zionists want Trump, Trump will be the president. Votes don't, like the votes, what the people want, you can forget, I mean, this is elite theory, right? The most powerful faction wins, and the most powerful faction will get their man in power. If the Zionists want Trump, Trump will be the president. So, yeah, I mean, that's how I see the narrative going, that they can, you know, they can pivot away from Ukraine and Trump can take the rap for it as well. Another way it could go is the way I talked about on Unpopular Opinions many months ago, where they, you know, some corruption, some scandal about Biden sees the light of day. They can just bury it with Biden, stick Biden down a sinkhole as well. That's another possibility. Rollover 101 says, you've been to Gibraltar, last significant colony. I have not been to Gibraltar. Rollover, in my imagination, it's a lot of fish and chips and British flags and people eating fry ups on the beach. Is that right? That's my mental image of it. Whether that's true, I don't know. TP says, right wing, Europe is homeland, colonies are ours. Left wing, Europe is everyone's, colonies for indigenous. Both inconsistent. Left is wrong because it's lame. Yeah, absolutely. Dylan98 says, AA, when are you going on Duran again? Well, I mean, I'm a bit busy at the moment. They said they would ask me back to talk about elite theory. My guess is that the Duran, given what's happening in geopolitics, are super busy. And me on to talk about elite theory is not exactly kind of exciting when you're up against World War III or Ukraine or Israel stuff happening every day. So I'm guessing that they will have me on in a quiet moment because that's what they talked about, is me coming on to talk about Elite Theory, which, you know, from their, from the point of view of their schedule, it just makes no sense me going on in the middle of everything kicking off now, is it? John Lister says, favorite Rolling Stones song? I mean, I basically see the Rolling Stones as a Delta Blues tribute act, basically. I'm really into 1930s Delta Blues. In fact, it was Keith Richards who got me into that, because I bought a, I think it was Uncut magazine once, and it came with Keith Richards picks his favorite Delta Blues songs on the CD on the front. I loved that CD, and it really got me into 30s Delta Blues. But it also really colored my image of the Stones as essentially being a blues act, or blues rock act, basically. But I'd have to have a real think about best Rolling Stones song, favorite song. I like one of their early hits. Was it called? What's that one? Get Out of My Cloud. Hey. You get out, what's that one? Get Out of My Cloud. I can't remember what it's called now. What's the name of that song? Get out of My Cloud. It's kind of an early one. There's a dark song called Under My Thumb, which I've always thought is pretty sinister. I'm trying to think of a lot of them blend into one because it's a lot of blues, isn't it? I'd probably go with one of those ones I just mentioned. I know they're not kind of popular picks. Get Out of My Cloud. If I had to pick one, I liked their album, Exile on Main Street, quite a lot. Yeah. Okay. No, I'll go with Get Out of My Cloud, that one. Get Off of My Cloud. Either Under My Thumb or Get Off My Cloud. It's one of those two. Unoriginal username says, I'm about to start Baldur's Gate 1 and 2. Any advice? Get the Baldur's Gate trilogy that turns them all into one massive game. That's one thing I'd suggest doing. At the start of Baldur's Gate 1, you'll die a lot. So that's another thing. Take some time to explore, enjoy yourself. And if you ever get bored playing Baldur's Gate 1, just know that it will be worth it when you get to Baldur's Gate 2, which is the greatest RPG ever made. That's what I would suggest. Try to take some time to read the little lore books if you've never been through the game before. My buddy Morkar made a video about Baldur's Gate 1 lore, what the actual plot is. Save that for after you finish playing Baldur's Gate 1, because the plot of Baldur's Gate 1 is actually pretty intricate. Spasticus Autisticus says, favorite ever rap verse, Eminem on Waiting Patiently for Me. My favorite verses are all by GZA. They're all by GZA. For me, he's the absolute genius of knocking out verses. So my mind immediately goes to GZA. And it'd probably be something off Liquid Swords. I think the opening verse of Living in the World Today is just ridiculously good. Probably the Living in the World Today opening verse, or the second verse on Gold or something like that. Any verse from Liquid Swords basically is the answer. To me, GZA is a different level of lyricist. TP says, have you watched Sam Hyde's comedy, World Peace? I have not watched Sam Hyde's comedy World Peace, I'm afraid. I do follow him on Twitter for some reason, even though I'm not particularly a Sam Hyde fan. He occasionally posts funny things, but I can't pretend that I'm into him, to be honest. I think that's it, unless I'm mistaken. JS says, even the Duran is now saying it's getting embarrassing for Iran, as it's proving to be an awful ally to Lebanon. Is it over for the so-called resistance? I mean, in my opinion, JS, unless they kind of step up now, they're looking like they're taking a feeble, feeble loss here. As I said earlier in the stream, and I think that is it. I'm pretty sure that is it. Excellent. Thank you very much, friends. Just under 2 hours. That's a nice time. I'll be back again tomorrow. Oh, last minute super chat from Hibernian Perspective says, hi, AA. Have you watched the Court Sense channel? His video on right-wing Leninism is very succinct. He gives sensible centrist vibes and is probably one of us. I have not heard of him. I will check out the Court's Sense. That is the Court's Sense. I'll just sub to him and check him out. You know, maybe I'll feed back if I get a chance to watch anything. I mentioned the people I tend to listen to earlier on. I mean, oh, that was somebody I forgot to mention. Scrump and Evelyn. I always, if they ever stream, I always listen to that as well. I haven't got round to their last one, but I will. They're another one I always listen to as well. Yeah, Pete Rock and CL Smooth, Mecca and the Soul Brother, classic. I always think CL Smooth is kind of underrated in a way. Pete Rock gets all the credit for being a ace producer, but you know. All right, thanks everybody. I'll be back tomorrow for The Deepest Law. By course of the Academic Agency. Enjoy my P. Diddy video and my short tomorrow. And I'll see you again tomorrow.
What goes on in this town is none of your business.
As long as I'm living here, it is.
Then maybe you shouldn't be living here!
Well, that's easily...